First, instrumentation failure, resulting in collision of one kind or another. Secondly, production of fire, usually in the vicinity of the fuel tanks. Thirdly, complete suspension of the entire electrical system in the airplane. Fourthly, the use of the force field of their own craft to induce structural failure. The Walesville, New York tragedy. The well-known Walesville case is very definitely an instance of this heat ray. A Starfire jet fighter, chasing a UFO near Utica, New York, was subjected to a ferocious heat which almost drove the pilot and observer insane and forced them to bail out of their fighter. The jet crashed into the village of Walesville with some loss of life. These airmen are fine young men, well trained and equipped with the best that the United States can provide. To make such men bail out of a plane over a populated area, the heat had to be fantastic. There was no question in this case of the UFO not being visible, for they were chasing it. It is also an instance of someone living to tell about what happened. Could there have been other instances similar in which there were no survivors? The UFO hovered above the scene of the crash, as large as life, glowing brilliantly. Word recently reached me of yet another abduction of pilots from a jet trainer out of Bowling Field, Washington, D.C. The trainer took off with two occupants, and 3 hours fuel. Given up for lost, the jet trainer suddenly appeared over the airfield 6 hours later, landed and skidded to a halt at the end of the runway. There were no occupants. Trevor, we have been puzzled by the abductions of whole airplanes and crews periodically. There are some things we would like to know. First, do you ever for any reason take human beings off this earth, or abduct them so to speak? Secondly, why are these airplanes taken? First, our laws forbid us to interfere in any way with the life of any entity. We cannot bring about a physical death wittingly under any circumstances. Everything must proceed in its universal plan, which we are bound to carry out. However, the Dark Ones do not live by these laws and prey upon mankind freely, seeking vehicles for themselves by any method they know. They do not hesitate to bring about the death, as you term it, of any entity if it serves their purpose. We have nothing to gain or learn by taking your machines. The reasons for abductions? Censored. They have several reasons for the abductions of airplanes and crews. First, they may desire the actual physical material of which the machine is constructed, for purposes of their own which don't concern you at the moment. Secondly, they may desire the entities and the airplane for purposes of their own, regarding which I shall presently tell you nothing. Thirdly, they may desire both of these two things in combination. The advancement in flight of Earthmen is moving steadily towards the 3,500 miles per hour, which is the limit of their present attainment. They are interested in seeing what you are doing and how you are doing it. The increasing mastery of the science of flight, soon to make extra large forward steps, is concerning them greatly. All this is a little beyond your present understanding, but eventually you will piece it all together and know the whole truth. Received in September, 1956. I wish to alert you to the forthcoming renewed attacks on your planes, which will be carried on by the Dark Ones. Keep careful watch on these reports. I resolved that I would watch the news with great care. I was disturbed by what happened. The reader must decide for himself whether or not there is any value or virtue to what I have recorded. Sept 17, Lockheed High Altitude U-2 research craft reportedly exploded and crashed near Kaiserslautern, Germany. The J-57 powered jet was in Europe conducting tests on clear air turbulence, convective clouds and jet streams at altitudes of 50,000-55,000 feet. The pilot was missing and feared dead. Sept 18, Madera, California. B-52A jet bomber bursts into flames in midair. 5 men killed, pilot escapes, together with another man variously described as a maintenance expert, etc. Earlier in the year, 1956. Another plane of the same type exploded in flight near Tracy, California, with malfunction of the complex electrical system blamed for the crash. Sept 22, Eindhoven, Holland, jet fighter crashes into thickly populated area. Pilot and Civilians Guild. SEP 22, San Bernardino, California jet fighter crashes on Mount McKinley in San Bernardino Mountains. Pilot escapes but crash starts worst fire in the history of the area. SEP. 24, Mount Yale, Colonel Air Force C-47 crashes into the north face of this mountain at 10:30 a.m. 12 occupants killed instantly. SEP. 25, Tallahassee, Florida, two jets collide over the city with all occupants killed in both planes. Part 8. October 2, Tokyo, Japan. USAF KB-29 tanker plane crashes. Got out of control on landing. October 2, San Diego, California, Navy AD-5N Sky Raider crashes into San Diego Bay, pilot missing. October 3, Honolulu, Hawaii, Marine jet fighter missing on night training flight. Fury jet was last heard from approaching its base at Kaneo Naval Air Station. October 3, Charleston, SDC-124 Globemaster crashes and burns on landing at Kelly Air Force Base. Coming in with one dead engine, plane lost power on second engine during final approach. October 4, Rapid City, SDNF-28D jet based at Ellsworth Air Force Base crashes. Pilot bails out after feeling explosion in the tail of the plane. Live rockets are strewn around crash site. October 4, Alcajan, California Navy F-3H Demon fighter crashes on mountainside. Pilot bailed out. October 5, Everett, Washington, two F-89H interceptors missing, believed to have collided in flight. Both planes carried pilot and radar observer. October 6, Medicine Bow Peak, Wyoming. DC-4 airliner crashes en route from Denver to Salt Lake City. The Civil Aeronautics Board, in its formal report, said the probable cause was pilot deviation from the planned Denver-Salt Lake City route for some unknown reason. Only a fool would point to such a list of accidents and say it is concrete proof of interference by UFO or proof of the hostility of some of them. It is not concrete proof, but it is a highly unusual list of accidents when it is considered alongside Ashtar's message of September 17, 1956. Many of these strange happenings in the air may be part of a long-term plan to terrorize, that is to produce fear in people. Referring to this matter, Ashtar made the following statement: "Let me give you this earnest injunction. Cast out all fear, for fear is the lubricant, the food and the vehicle of the dark forces. Without fear you are truly impregnable, so strive for this attainment. As for the seeming contradiction found in the possession of extremely advanced scientific devices by certain of these degenerate spirit beings, who appear to have aggressive designs on some aspects of our civilization, let another statement from Ashtar be our guide. Scientific advancement is not now, never was, and never will be related to moral development. Let those who adhere to the fiction that the advent of the UFO is a purely scientific phenomenon, unrelated to spiritual, moral or ethical values, ponder upon the self-evident truth of this statement. The dangers of indiscriminate mediumship, in recent years, since the first contacts with spacemen were made, a great deal of indiscriminate transmediumship has been indulged in by untrained persons of varying scruples. The result has been a plethora of communications from alleged spacemen, many of which are of a specious nature, self-contradictory and at variance with the observed facts. The point has now been reached in the various saucer clubs where the sound of a voice, any voice, on a tape recorder mumbling about the Confederation of Interplanetary Government or other questionable things is greeted with delighted cries of "It's the spaceman speaking." Voices of unseen personalities, no matter who they may claim to be, are no guarantee of truth. The thing that makes a man a liar is that he pretends to tell the truth and takes you in. A skillful liar often gets away with lying for years in our own society. Another difficulty lies in the fact that many people claiming contact with spacemen want to be the new messiah. Their total lack of discrimination merely indicates that they are ideally suited to be fooled. They are setups for those unethical invisibles who are themselves set up to fool, to delude and to confuse. The particular being referred to in this book, Ashtar, once expressed the view that all communications, no matter whence they are purported to emanate, be considered solely on their own merits. He has frequently stated that many come in his name and under his name, and therefore it is foolish to presume that because a message comes from Ashtar it is automatically the truth. It is his wish that all messages be scrutinized and given the full glare of critical judgment regardless of the purported source, and especially of the name employed, to gain confidence and ready ear. Ethical beings wishing to convey information will usually ensure that the person they contact will have access to and will seek protective measures necessary to prevent the unethical beings from interfering with and corrupting the channel they wish to use. For these ethical beings to open these faculties in a human being, probably by etheric means, is therefore a very solemn undertaking. Naturally, for their own purposes, they do not want contacts on Earth who are just broad-tuned to everything thrust at them from the invisible. Here is a warning on this matter from Andalo, mentioned earlier in the book, The Need for Occult Science. I shall issue this warning. Those of you who are seeking to make contact with the higher forces, are exposing yourself to dangers from which it may be beyond our power to deliver you once they have happened. Our suggestion to all those seeking contact by other than mechanical or artificial means is to first seek protection and knowledge from what are termed on your surface, occult sources. If you yourself rend the veil between yourself and the invisible worlds, then you may find waiting on the other side, forces alien to all your ideals and higher concepts. These forces will be unwilling to release you from their toils once you are in them. I therefore enjoin greatest care and caution in attempting telepathic contact with us. If you will read the earlier communications of this channel, you will realize, as nothing else will make you realize, the type of creatures with whom you may be making contact. Some of them are highly evolved and are able to masquerade as spacemen quite effectively. Others have nothing valid to impart and use your contact with them for joking amusement or as a means of obtaining control of a physical vehicle. These things deserve to be weighted and evaluated most carefully by those who, however sincere their beliefs, may in the very act of contacting us be exposing themselves to all that they do not wish to contact either in the visible or invisible realms. We have the power and means to make contact with any person we desire to be of conscious service to us, and when we make such contact, it is made so that the person concerned is neither harmed nor placed in danger. Reared in the Christian faith, I must insist that any invisible being serves the Christ Spirit before I will transact any business with him. In the stumbling, backsliding, groping fashion that is the hallmark of the Christian, I try to live according to the teachings of Jesus Christ. Trevor, why has the information you had given me been passed through me? That is, why have I been used as the channel for it? Ashtar, this information is well known in occult circles upon your planet, and has been known for many thousands of years by those you term initiates and adapts. This information, however, could not be revealed through their agency to the outside world. We therefore have selected individuals whose analytical minds and willingness to accept new concepts will make them channels for the truth. Your recognition of yourself as the channel for and not the originator of this material is both discreet and honorable. Let it be seen from this communication that the knowledge advanced step by step is neither new nor revolutionary in those circles, where under oaths of secrecy, all these matters are studied and mastered by those who are fitted for such things. In my opinion, a great deal more is already known of these UFO by certain human beings on Earth than could possibly be passed through a person of such limited abilities and knowledge as myself. Trevor, I would like your comments on the rumor being circulated that Ashtar is a giant mechanical brain. Ashtar, I have in the past mentioned this to my other friends. This idea is sown maliciously to bring about confusion and disbelief in what is coming from this source. The Dark Ones, who are our foes, would very much like to see the faith built up in these messages and contacts betrayed and destroyed, and yet the merit of their content forbids any such thing taking place. Hence the idea of a giant mechanical brain has been circulated to let your people think that they are contacting some vast mechanism instead of a being. I give you my personal assurance that I am as real and as individual as yourself. The fact that I am upon a plane of existence where higher vibrations prevail alters my reality not one whit. I do not see the reason for any further discussion upon this point. The highly important difference between astral and etheric. Trevor, I would like you to give your description of the differences between space people and spirit people. I would appreciate as full an answer as my understanding permits. Andalo, the differences are very great, although to the cursory glance it may seem that space people are spirits. However, it all comes down to a matter of the condition in which we dwell. We are etheric beings, in your expression. By this I mean that we live upon a higher plane of existence. We are not discarnate in the sense of having no bodies. We have etheric bodies which are counterparts of your bodies but which are made of a more tenuous substance, and which are not subject in the same way to gravitational effects. The etheric state in which we dwell is one of many on an ascending evolutionary scale to which we all belong. Above us, for example, are beings more highly evolved than us by as great a gap as there is between ourselves and you. This is not meant in any deprecatory sense towards you but merely as a factual statement about the scales on which we dwell. Upon our plane of life we have much the same type of existence as you do, although it is free of the corruptions, crimes and undesirable elements which are to be worked out of a being's karmic life before he may pass into the etheric state. Your Earth is a testing ground, one of many hundreds of thousands of testing grounds in the universe, where beings evolve upwards on the scale of life, working constantly towards junction with the Great One as the ultimate attainment of all existence. Part 9. Andalo, upon our plane of life we have much the same type of existence as you do, although it is free of the corruptions, crimes and undesirable elements which are to be worked out of a being's karmic life before he or she may pass into the etheric state. Your Earth is a testing ground, one of many hundreds of thousands of testing grounds in the universe, where beings evolve upwards on the scale of life, working constantly towards junction with the Great One as the ultimate attainment of all existence. We, upon the etheric planes, pass on to higher planes just as you do from Earth, when qualified. This transformation on your Earth is termed death. To us it is merely a transformer interposed between us and the next level of life to which we will ascend. We will stress once more that the greatest factor in the way of a proper grasp of the true story of life on your planet is the conception that death is the end of all existence. Nothing could be further from the truth. Upon your plane you must serve out the evolutionary period before you can ascend to the higher worlds. The fleshly bodies which you have are part of a plan to aid your working through this scale of existence. At your level you must endure savage crimes, wars, strife and violence, and the Great One, in his wisdom, has seen fit to use the fleshly body as the most convenient method of taking care of this almost elemental state of existence. Now then, there are more people waiting to serve out their karmic penalties than there are physical casings or bodies to go around. Therefore there is a dwelling place around your planet for those bodiless entities from your surface. These are spirits, or spirit people. They are, if you like, in suspension, or their evolution is interrupted, and they are anxious to return to the body, either to carry out something they left undone, or else, after realizing the truth or partial truth of creation, to become incarnate again and work towards proper passage through earthly life prior to ascending to higher realms. We are in bodies of a tenuous but nonetheless real substance, vibrating at a rate much greater than that which prevails upon your planet. Spirit people are dwellers in astral form who cannot go beyond that astral form without serving out their karmic life in a casing of flesh as you know it. Communication is possible, both with us and the spirit people. But in communicating with spirits you may find that they know but little more than earth dwellers, and in many cases not as much. They may have nothing valid to impart. They may play tricks and jokes upon people contacting them. Therefore we can only suggest that all such communication be done with extreme care and with a reason. Without reason behind it, it is little more than folly. I leave you in love and goodwill. I am Andalo. Let the predominant lesson of this chapter be that all who seek to contact human beings by extrasensory means may not be spacemen at all, at least as they have been depicted as tall, handsome, with long golden hair and no dental caries. Along with beings who are supremely wise and beneficent, there are those who are malevolent and malicious, and those who may not live by any standard of values we could comprehend. Realizing that I was venturing into realms where I was definitely a stranger, and in the presence of an order of beings I could not control, I decided to devote myself in the future to learning more about these things before opening any more doors. The struggle to get photographic evidence. In the days I went to the Mojave Desert to try to get some photographs of spacecraft, I had not even begun to fully comprehend the significance of the information I had been given, and fondly imagined that Ashtar and his men would come in their craft, become visible, I would photograph them, and that would be that. It was not that easy. Although it took me many months to realize it, the etheric forces probably do not have the power to manifest at our frequency level without the aid, witting or unwitting, of some person here. At the time I set my mind on the photographic project, Ashtar indicated that it would be difficult, but the paucity of my own knowledge undoubtedly prevented him from explaining exactly why it would be difficult. But it was impossible then, as I now see, for Ashtar to explain all these things to my lowly intelligence. Our first trip to the desert on this project took place on August 18, 1956, and the purpose of my friend Jim Woods and I was to get photographs on purpose. We have done the same thing many times since, and have driven many thousands of miles to master this art, or at least its elements. On this trip we were a pair of splendid ignoramuses and are appalled today by our own conceit in thinking that we were in just one weekend to lay bare the whole UFO mystery. So we set out for the Mojave, planning to drive down the strip of desert between Victorville and Yucca Valley, California, and camp there in an isolated spot. Ashtar suggested that I be on the alert for an indication of where to turn off the road, but I did not attach special importance to this. Part 10. Andalo, your Earth is a testing ground, one of many hundreds of thousands of testing grounds in the universe, where beings evolve upwards on the scale of life, working constantly towards junction with the Great One as the ultimate attainment of all existence. We on the etheric planes pass on to higher planes just as you do from Earth, when qualified. This transformation on your plane is termed death. To us it is merely a transformer interposed between us and the next level of life to which we will ascend. We will stress once more that the greatest factor in the way of a proper grasp of the true story of life on your planet is the conception of death as the end of all existence. Nothing could be further from the truth. Upon your plane, you must serve out an evolutionary period before you can ascend to the higher worlds. The fleshly bodies which you have are part of a plan to aid your working through this scale of existence. At your level you must endure savage crimes, wars, strife and violence, and the Great One, in his wisdom, has seen fit to use the fleshly body as the most convenient method of taking care of this almost elemental stage of existence. Now then, there are more people waiting to serve out their karmic penalties than their physical casings or bodies to go around. Therefore there is a dwelling place around your planet for these bodiless entities from your surface. These are spirits or spirit people. They are, if you like, in suspension, or their evolution is interrupted, and they are anxious to return to a body either to carry out something they left undone, or else, after realizing the truth or partial truth of creation, to become incarnate again and work towards proper passage through earthly life prior to ascending to higher realms. We are in bodies of a tenuous but nonetheless real substance, vibrating at a rate much greater than that which prevails upon your planet. Spirit people are dwellers in astral form who cannot go beyond that astral form without serving out their karmic life in a casing of flesh as you know it. Communication is possible for you, both with us and with the spirit people. But in communicating with spirits you may find that they know but little more than earth dwellers, and in many cases not as much. They may have nothing valid to impart. They may play tricks and jokes upon people contacting them. Therefore we can only suggest that all such communication be done with extreme care and with a reason. without reason behind it, it is little more than folly. I leave you in love and goodwill. I am Andalo. The reasons for our lives here on Earth would appear to be much more complex, logical and intellectually acceptable than the combined hocus-pocus of doctor and priest would have us think, if this communication with Andalo is valid. Let the dominant lesson of this chapter be that all who seek to contact beings by extrasensory means may not be spacemen at all, at least as they have been depicted as tall, handsome, with long golden hair and no dental caries. Along with beings who are supremely wise and beneficent, there are those who are malevolent and malicious, and those who may not live by any standard of values we could comprehend. Adventures in the Desert. Before the original booklet Spaceman, Friends and Foes was published, I had arranged to make a visit to the Mojave Desert, northeast of Los Angeles, to try and get some photographs of spacecraft. In those days I had not even begun to fully comprehend the significance of the information I had been given, and fondly imagined that Ashtar and his men would come down in their craft, become visible, I would photograph them, and that would be that. It was not that easy. Although it took me many months to realize it, the etheric forces probably do not have the power to manifest at our frequency level without the aid witting or unwitting of some person here. At the time I set my mind on the photographic project, Ashtar indicated that it would be difficult, but the paucity of my own knowledge undoubtedly prevented him from explaining exactly why it would be difficult. On our first trip to the desert, August 18, 1956, my friend Jim Woods and I were a splendid pair of ignoramuses, and we are appalled today by our own conceit in thinking that we were in just weekend to lay bare the whole UFO mystery. Ashtar suggested that I be on the alert for an indication of where to turn off the road to Victorville, but I did not attach much importance to this. The engine overheated badly. In removing the radiator cap, my hand was flung aside and a geyser of dirty, boiling, acid-charged water shot into the air. I was caught on the right side of the face by this jet and suffered a bad scald on forehead, cheek, nose and eye area. I thought it best to abandon the trip and return to Los Angeles. We had dinner in my apartment, a painful process for me up until 8:30 p.m., the time of our prearranged contact with Ashtar on the desert. In the 10 minutes following 8:30 p.m. all sensation of pain completely left my face, to the point where I did not know I had been burned. I also felt a great renewal of strength, a surge of energy and power. I was even able to bang my knuckles against the burnt portion of my face without any sensation of pain. We both felt ourselves imbued with the desire to go to the desert again in spite of the fact that we had already driven over 100 miles that day. We made a point of prayers again and set off again in very high spirits. Spaceman, friend or foe? Driving out beyond Victorville some 9 or 10 miles down the Lucerne Valley Road, we saw a red light swinging in the sky above us. We stopped the car, pulled over to the side of the road and turned off both lights and engine. Through 12 power binoculars the object appeared to be hovering and dancing up and down slightly. We studied it for a few minutes and were about to move on after chalking up an indefinite when our attention was drawn to a monstrous cluster of colored lights moving across in front of us on the same bearings as the swinging light. Through the glasses this cluster of lights revealed itself to be a large cylindrical shaped craft with red, green and white lights on it. I estimated its altitude at roughly 7,000 feet. And it moved dead ahead to dead astern and out of sight in about 30 seconds. It was noiseless. We were stunned by what we had seen. I thought it was probably a carrier craft of some kind, probably from 6 to 8 times the size of a DC-6 airliner. We were certain it was an out-of-this-worlder when a B-36 or similar heavy bomber lumbered over at a greater altitude and the beat of its engines was clearly audible. After about an hour of driving down the road to Yucca Valley, which would have put them in the general area of George Van Tassel's Giant Rock Airport and the Integritron, I thought I detected a change in the beat of the engine. A few minutes later I was sure of it as the car began to slow down and the throttle began to close under unseen control. I floored the gas pedal but the engine would not respond. A gentle force on my arms turned the car to the roadside. Jim spied a small road going off at a sharp angle from the main road. As late as 2 months ago, we had a great deal of difficulty locating this road in broad daylight.